JT live in Vegas.
No chance an inaugural expansion hockey team's going to make the playoffs. Stop. They did.
The Knights win the Pacific Division in their inaugural season.
This city must turn into a hockey city on the radio fast. Talked to a friend today and he said, listen, it's all gravy from here on out. I go, you're wrong. It's not all gravy. You didn't get here to lose in the first bleeping round.
He's gone. All through his legs. Carlson, shorthanded.
I'm going to let you act like a hockey town the way they do in Detroit and Boston.
We got to match the intensity that they're going to bring. They have the experience, but we got home ice.
Somebody with a pulse.
This playoff, every game matters.
Here come the Knight fans.
What Vegas is going to bring into that arena is going to be incredible.
Let's act like a hockey town. Let's do our job. Let's go balls out every day for an hour. That's the only radio I do. I'm ready to go. I'm fired up.
Okay, guys, show us what you got.
And now, live from Las Vegas, here's JT the Brick.
Great to have you on a Friday, JT, brought to you by Golden Entertainment, the home of PT's, Sierra Gold, where I had lunch earlier in the day, right there at Jones and the 215, and the Stratosphere. I actually was in the Golden Entertainment box last night for a little bit at the hockey game. We'll lead with the hockey game. Good to have you again on a Friday. 4 hours coming up here of a recap this hour of the hockey game last night and more about the NFL draft at the top of the hour on the national show. If you want to get in, start dialing now. We'd love to talk to you, especially if you went to the game last night to once again see history. It's sounding like a broken record, and I'm in the radio business. It sounds like every time I go to a game or watch a game, something unique happens. First shutout victory in the postseason. First overtime victory in the postseason. Now, a 7-0 beatdown of San Jose in game one of the second round of the postseason. That game was over when it started. That was an absolute mismatch. San Jose is in town. They can hear this show. They should be embarrassed by that effort. It was pathetic. Wasn't borderline pathetic. It was outright pathetic. Now, you can look at it two ways, and I could use your help with this. Are the Knights that much better than the Sharks? Or do you say, hey, throw that game out. Just a bad night for San Jose, and they're going to be back. 876-1340. I'll go first. It looks to me to be a mismatch. San Jose can't keep up with Vegas' speed. They don't have a goaltender who's anywhere near as good as Vegas' goaltender in Fleury. So to me, it looks like a mismatch. It definitely was for everybody in the building last night. Last night was an absolute beatdown of epic proportions, and you rarely see that in sports, and it's tough to come back in hockey. You know, baseball, you can give up 4 runs in the top of the first inning. You know, you got 8 innings left. You can kind of get back into a baseball game with a couple of doubles and a home run. You can't do that against Marc-Andre Fleury. You cannot come back and score 3, 4, 5 goals on him. It's over. It got chippy. It got a little bit physical. But again, if you weren't in your seats in the first 5 minutes, the game was over as it started. That first couple of shifts, you could just tell that Vegas was in the game. They were rested, and they were very fast.
A jam shot that came from Nate Schmidt. Now it's McNabb at the left point. He shoots. Tipped in! At the side of the net, Cody Eakin was parked at the side of the crease, and the Knights take a 1-0 lead.
You're going to see a few goals like that. You got to park someone out in front and hope for a deflection to get one in. And it was very important. Some of the guys I talked to up in the press box before the game said that they felt that this was the game that you had to score first. San Jose didn't want to get that lead and then eventually maybe get a 2-goal lead and shut it down and play the defensive style that they're very good at. That was not the case because the Golden Knights just kept pouring it on.
By Alex Tuck. He's got a 1-on-2, now joined by Halla through center. Tuck gets through right circle, drops it off. Halla scores! 2 goals in half a minute for Vegas. 2-0 for the Knights. 5 minutes into the first period.
Yeah, 2-0, game over. Game over, and what do you do the rest of the day? You go to the bar? What do? You walk around the concourse, get a pizza? What do? I mean, you just take selfies? Game's over at that point. I thought the third goal was really exciting here because this took all the will away from the opponent.
Knights coming back in. Here's Smith on the near side. Feeds Marchessault. He shoots. He scores! Marchessault, his first Stanley Cup playoffs goal, and the Knights take a 3-0 lead. minutes into the first period.
7 minutes into the first period, and it's an absolute blowout. So everybody was starting to see this around the world. Hockey fans around the world were saying, whoa. What's going on? They're looking at their phone alerts. If they're watching NHL tonight, if they're looking on the scroll for the score, what is going on inside of T-Mobile? And that's what I want to hear from some of the listeners today. What was the difference in that game for you last night? To me, it was the speed and the inability for San Jose to keep up with the chemistry of the Knights when the Knights are on offense. Like I said, I've never seen anything like this in hockey. The chemistry that this team has when they pass, they drop the puck behind, there's someone there. When they shoot the puck around the boards and there's a teammate waiting, what they're doing, the blind passes, are incredible. They look like a team that's been together 6-7 years, and these lines have been playing together. They're just that much better. Bobby, let's get to the seventh goal that really put the icing on this. Everybody was still in the building. People weren't looking to leave. They just wanted to see more goals.
Neal denied a goal by the referee's whistle at the end of the second period, looking for one, stops, and scores! On cue, power play goal, James Neal hits an extra point after the touchdown. Knights lead it 7-0.
Yeah, there's Dan Duva, who I had a chance to see before the game, and he was really excited about this opportunity. Great guy. We'll have him on a radio show sometime next week. 7-0, Golden Knights at home in game one. Where does the series go from here? I like doing this type of radio because I'm typically the guy pulling everybody back, saying, hold on, whoa, wait a second, it's not over. You're up 3-0, it's not over. To me, it looks like it's over. Am I nuts? It looks like it's over. Yeah, of course they could lose the game. They could lose Saturday. I would doubt it. It looks like a mismatch when it comes to personnel, speed, and everything that Vegas has going. And if Vegas can win this game on Saturday, 5-1, 4-0, whatever it would be, then I think it takes the will of San Jose away even to go back home. You know, a lot of teams go back home after they lose two and they get that game at home. Well, the Kings weren't able to do that in Los Angeles, and I don't think that the Sharks will be able to do it if the Knights go up 2-0. So do you feel like game two is that important, or after a blowout win like this, do you just sit back, kick your feet up, and say, look, we'll see what happens. We're controlling the series. We know you're controlling the series. How do you put this series away quickly and have the problem we had last week, not knowing when the next round of games are going to be, sitting around for 6 or 7 days wondering when there's going to be more hockey? 876-1340 is the number. For Gallant, after the game, pretty excited because 7 different players contributed in the scoring.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like you said, we roll 4 lines, we play all 6 defensemen, and everybody's a big part of our group. And, you know, so it's anytime you get scoring from all different people, it's good for your hockey club. And like I said, I just thought it wasn't even about the 7 goals. It was about the way we played the game from start to finish. And we competed hard, we played hard, and we played a good solo hockey game for 60 minutes.
What a break for Fleury. I mean, Fleury was very active in the game. He had a couple of great saves. But it just looked like he was a man among boys. It looked like he was a NHL veteran goalie playing a junior team from Quebec. It just didn't look like anybody could get a clear passing lane. Didn't look like anybody could score. No one could get a really good shot. And Gallant knows with Fleury and goal, they're going to be all right.
Well, he's outstanding. I mean, obviously tonight, I think they had 30-some shots, and it wasn't an easy shutout. They had some good power play time, and he made some key saves at key times. So Marc-Andre's been outstanding for us, and like I said, when he makes saves like that, it gives you a chance. And, you know, we got the big lead, but he just kept him off the score sheet, and that was huge for us.
And I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but you got the coach of the year, the Jack Adams, will go to Gallant. You could have the Lady Bing Award, obviously going to Wild Bill, and then you wonder if you could get the Conn Smythe. What's going to happen, obviously, in the postseason here with Fleury? I mean, he could be the MVP of the postseason. He's that dominant already. A matter of fact, I think he's distancing himself from everyone in the postseason after the shutout of the Kings and then the shutout 7-0 in game one. 876-1340 is our number for Knight fans. John, you're on Fox Sports Radio. Go ahead.
How are you doing today, boss?
Doing well, thanks.
Personally, I think that we shouldn't just kick back and relax. It's not over until the fat lady sings.
I know the team's not going to kick back and relax. I'm talking about us, the fans. And I really believe that a lot of fans who were in the building like I were last night saw what I saw. Saw an inferior hockey team going up against a great team. It could change, and maybe it does, but to me it looks like Vegas is clearly faster and better than San Jose.
Well, not only that, but from what I was hearing on the radio, because I was actually parked right outside the T-Mobile, I was we gave them the shock and awe. All of our fans were there and put up such a loud roar. I could hear you guys outside. That was even without the TV going.
Wow. So you're outside and you can hear the crowd inside at T-Mobile when they're scoring goals. That's incredible. I didn't hear that before.
And I think personally, the fans gave them the shock and awe. We broke their spirit right there off the back just by them seeing the fans there at home.
Yeah, I think we're hearing a lot of that. Thanks for the call. I think we're hearing a lot of what's happening here is with the opening of the program, with the opening of the night, with everything that happens out there, with all the entertainment, the drums, you know, the horns, everything that's happening early on when the lights go down, it's very intimidating. It's very intimidating. These are real tough hockey guys, and San Jose is a big veteran, tough team. They've seen it all, but they haven't played in a building like this because it's an inaugural expansion team in the playoffs. This changes everything. Look, going up to the Shark Tank, which I've been to several times, that's a hostile environment, the way that arena was built, how loud it is. And I expect that place to be loud, but nowhere near as loud as T-Mobile. I mean, T-Mobile's just got something special going, and I'm really excited about that. Vincent, thanks for holding. You're on Fox. Go ahead.
Hey, you know, one thing I wanted to say was about the chemistry, basically. Mm-hmm. I'm a Red Wings fan. I was actually raised in Michigan, so I was always watching Tatar. And so when we picked up Tatar, I was actually really excited. Along with Reeves, I think Reeves is still a solid player. But one thing that I realized is after the fact, we started playing different as a team. It seemed like the confidence went down a bit once we brought those guys into the lineup. So once Tatar came out of the lineup and once basically Gallant picked and chose who he wanted to be in the lineup, this solid lineup that was actually there from the beginning of the season, it seems like we gained that confidence back, and all of a sudden the team is clicking on all cylinders again.
Yeah, I think it's great. Thanks for the call. Really appreciate it. I think the health of the team is something that we shouldn't underestimate now. Typically, when you get to the postseason in all sports, you got guys banged up, right? Steph Curry can't play for the Warriors. Kawhi Leonard didn't play most of the season for the Spurs. You look at football players, they might miss a big game because they're injured. The fact that this team is healthy and playing at this level and getting this much time off, right? They're getting all this time off as they're great athletes in great shape already. And Gallant has to balance now practice schedules and those morning skates and how to keep this team off their legs and keep them fresh. Again, I started off the game in the press box. I moved around later. When I was down by the glass watching the game in the second period, the speed kills. The speed is insane. They went around several of the Shark defensemen like the guys had their heads on a swivel. Literally, guys going by them, and they're trying to communicate, and there's guys rushing down. And the way the Knights get into the offensive zone, and they pour it on, they're just great. And they're great at the point, too, not letting the puck get out. So everything's great about this team now. Rarely in my job, a sports talk radio, rarely do I see something this perfect. Rarely. The Patriots. Right, you see certain things that happen, and you watch it, and you go, oh, this is special. Well, this has been going on for a while. Let me pause for a second, because Jim Brown, the greatest football player of all time, in my opinion, is walking out with his cane in Dallas to make the selection for the Cleveland Browns. This will be the first pick in the second round of the draft. Jim Brown is making that selection. There's a lot of Hall of Famers that will make their selections for their team. Willie Brown will be making the selection for the Raiders coming up here. And I'll get into the Raider draft coming up here in a little bit, which was interesting to me. Look at that. Austin Corbett, the guard from Nevada, right here, was picked by Cleveland. So that's the first pick. Austin Corbett, the guard out of Nevada, is the first pick in the second round of the draft. He goes to Cleveland, and we'll move over to the draft here, and I can tell you what Cleveland did yesterday to me was mind-blowing. To take Baker Mayfield number one overall was shocking. Baker Mayfield won the Heisman Trophy. He's the 18th Heisman Trophy winner to be taken number one overall. When you look at the history of the sport, it's a great, proud tradition to win that trophy. But I didn't think Baker Mayfield was worthy of that. 2 to 3 months ago on this broadcast, we were talking about Baker Mayfield possibly being a second-round pick. Mid to late second round pick. But the smokescreen by Cleveland was magical. It was incredible that they did this. My theory was, is that they were blowing smoke to the national media saying, we might take Mayfield. And everybody's going, whoa, what do you mean? I might want Mayfield. But I didn't think they'd take him number one because it's too risky. He's the same size as Drew Brees and Russell Wilson, Johnny Manziel. They flamed out on all their other quarterbacks. And this guy has an arrest video, which isn't the end of the world. He's pretty cocky. And I just think it would be safe. It'd be a safe move for Cleveland just to step aside and take the best player available. Once they took Baker Mayfield, the race was just on. And I was blown away. And then all the other quarterbacks started to line up. And saw a couple of the quarterbacks drop, including Josh Rosen, who the Raiders traded out of the number 10th pick to, so Arizona could go in and get him. So I wanted to start off with the quarterback selections overall. I thought Mayfield going number one was balls out, very risky. And I think Sam Darnold going number three to the Jets was probably the biggest pick in the entire draft. The Jets never thought he'd be there at number three, and they got probably the best player out there. And how about this? Will Hernandez, who was in studio with me on Friday, they're showing him on TV. Will Hernandez out of UTEP is the second selection in the second round of the NFL draft. He'll go to the big blue wrecking crew. The Giants get big Will Hernandez, who, again, I just met him on Friday. He sat in with us for about 15 minutes and was a gentleman. Really excited about that. Congratulations to Will and his family. A lot of people thought he was a first-round pick. This is pretty close, the second pick overall. So two offensive linemen go out in the second round right out of the gate to Cleveland and the New York Giants. 876-1340. So there we go. When we come back, we're going to catch up with Bob Strum. He was pivotal with the birth and development of the Las Vegas Thunder. The Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame announced their class for 2018. And the Thunder are getting in. A tremendous accomplishment in this town. Bob will join us coming up in a little bit. And we'll talk Knights hockey the rest of the way. If you got anything on that game or what you expect to see on Saturday, hit me up via Twitter at JT the Brick.
We know San Jose is a good hockey club. That's not going to happen again, 7-0. They're a great team, and they, you know, we got some early goals on them and took advantage of that. And the power play here, we had some opportunities. So they'll be a lot better, and hopefully we'll be better too.
Gerard Gallant on the blowout win, and it was an absolute beatdown blowout. And how do you bounce back from that if you're San Jose? San Jose's in town. San Jose's listening. San Jose, we talked early in the season about the Vegas flu and these teams coming in and getting overwhelmed right out of the gate. San Jose's a team that's been very bitter over the years because they've been close. They've been close. They should have had one of the cups that the Kings got, and this is a franchise that hasn't won the cup, and they've been knocking on the door for decades. And again, to me, it looked like a mismatch. I want to hear from the fans because I expect San Jose to show a lot of heart and come back. But if I saw what I think I saw watching that game last night, the speed of the Vegas Golden Knights were just so intense and so much faster than San Jose that there's got to be a complete fundamental change in the style that San Jose plays in this next game. If you remember the Kings, in the second, third, fourth game, it was really tough to find any space on the ice, especially the middle of the ice. They were really chippy. It was very physical there. I expect the same thing. I think that San Jose is going to want to slow down the Knights when they're in the middle of the ice and try to slow them up so they're not going in to these two-on-one, three-on-two advantages with the speed and the speed that kills. Incredible performance. We're waiting on Bob Strum, who's going to join us. He's one of the newest members of the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame. That class is out, and we're going to talk to him in a little bit there. Also, the NFL draft. I was not shocked, but I was very surprised that the Raiders traded out of number 10. You know, this is my 20th season coming up with the Raiders and John Gruden's first back. And I thought that John Gruden would probably take a defensive player. But what happened was when the Raiders saw all the quarterbacks going and then all the good defensive players there, I believe that they thought that one of those defensive players would be there until the phone rang. The phone rang, and it was Arizona looking to make a trade. Once the Raiders agreed to that trade, Josh Rosen went number 10. He goes number 10, which I think is a solid pick, because I thought he could have went number 2, 3, 4 at quarterback. So Arizona got value, and the Raiders picked up Martavis Bryant, the wide receiver from Pittsburgh, who's been in trouble in the past. The last two Raiders signings have been character guys who've had personal transgressions. So now we're looking at a situation here where the Raiders took a big risk, but they were able to get an extra pick and use that pick to make that trade with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now Derek Carr has weapons. He has Bryant as the deep threat downfield. He's got Amari Cooper as the number one receiver, and obviously Jordy Nelson, who comes over from the Green Bay Packers. So the way I look at this is that the Raiders are now done on offense. They took an offensive lineman. They have 3 to 4 wide receivers. They might try to move Seth Roberts, who they just gave a nice contract to. And they have depth at the running back position with Beast Mode, Marshawn Lynch, and the moves that they've made in the offseason. So the Raiders pick is coming up here in a few picks, and I'd be shocked if they didn't take the best linebacker available, or if they didn't go out and take at least someone who can play and start in the defensive backfield. The concern for me with the Raider pick on the offensive line is that he's got to be ready to play. He's got to be able to come in and play right out of the gate and start, because if that's not the case, that means the players that were taken in front of the Raiders are starters, and there are plenty of players behind the Raiders draft pick who are starters. I hope the Raiders didn't reach on their 15th pick overall. Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame, the class of 2018, and a place I'm pretty excited about, the Las Vegas Thunder, for being a little part of that organization back in the day. Bob Strum joins us. Bob, congratulations on this, and I'm sure everyone associated with the organization in the past is proud about this.
Well, I'm thrilled for everyone, no question, including everyone, including yourself that was involved. Certainly the Stickney family that had the foresight to bring top professional hockey to Las Vegas, and all the players that committed to us, especially that first season and early in our performance, for believing in us and Vegas as a hockey city. It's a huge honor, no question.
Bob, tell us about the birth of this team. How did it come about? Tell us before hockey came to this town, especially on this level, and how difficult it was to get it off the ground.
Well, I got hired the first week in May, so we had 4 months to put a team together. But I had been working in pro scouting and had a real good book on all the players that were available. So what we did initially is commit to the players that had strong influence in the pro player community. Jim Kite, our first captain. I think Jimmy's coming to the dinner all the way from Ottawa, Canada. Jim was a huge help. Mark Habshad certainly was, he was the kid from the breakfast cereal commercial. If Mikey likes it, it must be good. That was my approach initially, is to sign a handful of guys that had influence and then use their handshake, so to speak, with other players to build a hockey team.
Bob Strum's kind enough to join us. The Vegas Thunder, Las Vegas Thunder, will be inducted into the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame coming up in this next class. We'll have all the inductees on this show, most of them, here over the next week. And as the former general manager, we're talking now about the Vegas Golden Knights. What were your concerns initially with this team? How competitive was the league? And what was really your calling card for the players, Bob, that you were looking for back in the day?
Well, I think it was a matter of trust and respect. I mean, I'd been around. I knew most of the guys. We had a lot of Western boys that first year and on through our existence, guys that I had come across or knew. I had no misgivings about the current club being successful. I mean, as you well recall, on big nights and big games, we had 10, 11, 12,000 people at the Thomas and Mack, which was a basketball building. So, you know, and we had lots of NHL jerseys in our crowds with the Thunder. So I'm thrilled that Vegas has shocked the hockey world. As far as their performance goes, I don't think anybody that knew anything about professional hockey expected the performance they're putting on They just got a bunch of guys that had character, that had speed, and, of course, the backbone of their team, Marc-Andre Fleury. I mean, how often do you get a Hall of Fame goaltender to start your expansion club? I mean, Fleury is in a zone right now, three shutouts in the first five playoff games. And for my liking, I mean, they named McKinnon and a couple other guys as MVP candidates in the league this year. In my mind, there's only one number one MVP in the National Hockey League, and that's Marc-Andre Fleury.
Nice compliment with Fleury and the organization and the smarts to have a three-time Cup champion goaltender who now is electric. He's unbeatable. He's incredible in this postseason. Bob Strum, as we wrap it up. Bob, give me the Mount Rushmore of the Las Vegas Thunder players, or a few of them, three or four of the greatest players to play in Vegas with your organization.
Well, there's two categories. We had NHL guys come in, Curtis Joseph, Alexei Yashin, Pavel Dimitra, Russell A., Sergei Zhaltok, all of whom have passed on us, but are maybe RIP. So we had that category of players, but certainly Patty LaFave, all-time leading scorer, Ken Quinney, Radek Bonk, Jimmy Kite, Roddy Buskus, Clint Malarchuk would be a pretty good starting six of players that committed to us that were part of our success along the way.
What are you doing now in your life, Bob? I'm looking forward to seeing you coming up here. What do you do day to day?
I am the chief hockey officer for Avenir Sports, a fellow named Bill Gallagher who owns the Portland Winterhawks in the Western Hockey League and the Lausanne Lions in the Swiss National League. So it keeps me busy. I oversee the organizations and hire the people, and I'm really enjoying it, and I've got NHL hockey 20 minutes from my front door right here in Vegas, so there is a hockey god.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Thank you, Bob. We'll talk to you more often anytime. Love to have you in studio and talk hockey with you again. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
All right, congratulations to Bob Strum and the entire Thunder organization as they'll be in that Hall of Fame class. Al Bernstein, Armin Gilliam will be a part of it, Forrest Griffin. I'm excited about that. We'll go through the list of all the honorees. It's one of the better events in town. I mean, if you look at all the great events that are in town, how do you keep track of Vegas and all these events coming up? This is a fantastic event. If you want to get tickets to the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame banquet and you haven't been to it in the past, it's a great event. I mean, I've seen everyone from Andre Agassi, Dana White, Floyd Mayweather, the people that get inducted. You go here and you see these big names and you watch it. It truly is fantastic. When we come back, we'll talk to the chief marketing officer of your Vegas Golden Knights. And he brought me in a brilliant gift. Got to tweet it out at JT the Brick. I'm humbled by this gift, and it'll be in the house on Saturday. Not in the press box, but we'll have to find a place to for my wife to break it out during the game. I'm fired up. It's an honor to be on the flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights.
Clearly the frustration, and now here's another penalty. Yeah, here we go. Slashing is the call. Now Kane, several cross checks to the face of Belmar, who goes down in front of the Vegas net. Kane's helmet pops off.
Belmar looks injured.
Kane blatantly cross checked him in the face. Now Pavelski was already getting a penalty for slashing.
He's thrown Kane out of the game.
Yeah,
Kane's finished.
That's suspendable.
Yeah, I'm not a dirty player by any means. And obviously it was unfortunate. Just went into a scrum and cross-checked him there in the arm, as you saw there. And unfortunately, it kind of rolled up the second time. When he extended his arm there, and obviously there was no intent. And glad he wasn't hurt on the play. And it's good to see him back on the ice. So don't want to put my team in that situation. And we'll put this one behind us, and we'll look forward to the next game.
Yeah, you got to say that is a dirty play, and we're waiting on the suspension. We're waiting to see when it comes down the pipe, and that's a big deal with Joe Thornton and his ability to come back, and they got to get him back on the ice before the series gets out of control. JT, brought to you by PTs, all the PTs here in the Valley, the great cross promotions they have going on with the Vegas Golden Knights, all the bar specials, the food specials. Come with me to PTs. I'm thrilled to welcome in studio Brian Killingsworth, who is the chief marketing officer of the Vegas Golden Knights. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me, JT.
This is unbelievable. First off, thanks for the gift. He came in and presented me with a jersey. I really appreciate it, and I can't wait to wear it. And being in the building last night, it's just a phenomenon for you and your job and your title. How much fun are you having?
It's a blast. I mean, every day I pinch myself that we have this opportunity to live here in Las Vegas, and we have this team that has just been so phenomenal.
Tell us about your background, because you were in the NFL recently.
I was, yeah. I spent 2 years with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 3 years prior to that with the St. Louis Rams, and then 10 years in Major League Baseball with the Tampa Bay Rays.
Outstanding. So that's a unique perspective with multiple sports. What did you bring to the table? How did this job come about? How'd you hear about it?
Well, it was an opportunity where there was an opening, and we were about 70 days away from the opener. And I've got a good buddy, Jim Frivola, who's the chief partnership officer over there. He and I worked with the Bucks together. He said there was an opening and jumped at the chance to interview with Bill Foley, had a chance to meet our president, Kerry Buchholz, and knew this was the place for me.
When you take a look at the challenges in front of you, I think some of the challenges when you market a team like this is, can you catch up? Because all of a sudden this team gets off to this good start and people are saying, well, you know, I hope they play at a 500 level. I hope they're competitive. When did it sink in your offices that this team is special? They're doing something unique every night and we have to keep up with them on the marketing side.
I'd say the first month, we knew right away that we had something that we needed to prepare even more for. You know, a lot of the merchandise we have to order months and months in advance, but we're just constantly trying to keep up with demand. And it's just incredible the way this community has supported this team. So we tried to meet the demand on a day-to-day basis.
Brian Killingsworth is with us, chief marketing officer for the Vegas Golden Knights. Talk about the logo. You got a beautiful jacket on, and everybody loves everything about it. But Mr. Foley, initially, with the name of this franchise, the logo, how difficult was it to navigate through that and then call up all your suppliers and say, we're ready to go. Here's the logo. Here's the gear. Let's go out and sell it.
Well, Bill Foley had a vision. He wanted it to look a certain way. He worked with Adidas and he worked with the NHL, and I think it's a fantastic logo. It's clean. It's got great lines. The colors are amazing. They represent this region with the gold and the black and the steel gray with the armor, and I think the great thing about it is the logo represents more than just a hockey team. It represents the culture of being a knight and what that means, to protect the unprotected, always advance, never retreat. So it really brings a power, this really special notion of Las Vegas and what that means. And I think it's becoming more of a universal brand that people associate with.
Brian Killingsworth is our guest from the Vegas Golden Knights. Wanted to ask you about the challenges from the regular season to the postseason. We had a nice break here. It got uncomfortable for a lot of fans. I was at a few of the practices and fans are walking around looking at their phones, waiting, when's the game going to be put up? When's game one? What's the challenge has been like, and has it been good for you to have that extra week to catch up?
I think so. On the business side, you know, we're always trying to up the demand and try to meet our fans' expectations. So our practices have been like playoff atmospheres,
yeah,
too.
Amazing.
It's incredible. I mean, those are open to the public. They're free. We're giving out towels. We've got DJs. It's an incredible environment. It's jam-packed. So we're really trying to focus on those practices to give fans a chance to at least be up close and personal with this team if they don't get a chance to go to T-Mobile Arena. But we've been preparing for this game and also Saturday, and so we're excited to unveil new surprises for these games.
Nice. And that's what I was going to ask you next. It seems like there is a surprise. I was there, you know, working during the week and being able to go on the weekends or selected games like last night, and the retirement of the number 58 and what that meant, and some of these openings are incredible. And it just seems like you have to top yourself every night, from game day operations, your department of marketing, and it's incredible. What's the buzz like in your office every day in this inaugural expansion here?
It's an incredible place to work. Kerry Buchholz, our president, sets the culture for everybody, but we're just having a blast. We're trying to be as innovative as possible. We can come up with an idea and execute it on a day-to-day basis, and I think that's really incredible to have a lean organization like that. Johnny Greco leads our entertainment team, so he's constantly pushing us to really wow our fans, and it's just really neat to be around the offices and to create this atmosphere for fans on a daily basis.
Tell us about VGK Worldwide. I think this is really a smart marketing opportunity.
you know, we'll always be Vegas born as a franchise. We're the first major professional sports franchise here in Vegas. We're extremely proud of that. But as we continue to go forward and into the playoffs, we've noticed that we've become this universal brand that people follow all around the world. It's really a global phenomenon, and people are seeing that this story, it transcends sports. And so we sent a tweet out for the first road game in LA to see where fans were watching it from, and we had over 1,500 replies as to where they were watching it from, countries like England and Germany and Philippines and the different countries all around the world, and it was incredible. So we decided to really go on this campaign about VGK Worldwide to have fans all around the world tell us why they're a Golden Knights fan and where they live, and we're actually sending out these t-shirts to these people about the fact of where they're from. No matter where they're from, they still cheer for the Golden Knights.
It's incredible because I'm having fun with it on the radio. We're talking to Brian Killingsworth. He's the chief marketing officer of the Vegas Golden Knights. Got a great job. Was so kind enough to come in studio, bring me a jersey today. Really appreciate it. You know, I grew up an Islander fan, a diehard Islander fan when they won four cups in a row. And I've been having fun on the radio telling people that this was your chance to get rid of your team and join this team, because I'm not a believer that you can have two hockey teams. You can't have three. You got to have one. And there were a lot of people in Vegas already that loved their team, the Blackhawks, the Sharks, the Canucks, wherever they're from. But they had a moment, Brian, where they could have said, I'm going to sever that tie because this is inaugural expansion and I can do it clean. What's that been like for you in the marketing side of this? Because a lot of fans I still see are on the fence. I was having dinner last night after the game with a Red Wing fan, and he says, I'm not ready yet. I'm supporting the team. And I follow up, well, what happens when they play the Red Wings? He goes, well, ask me next year after this run. So there are fans that are making that switch every day. I'm assuming hundreds a day.
Yeah, I mean, when you have this allegiance and you grew up with a particular team, we understand that. But I think that gives us an edge as this market, mm-hmm. because these fans are knowledgeable about hockey. And from day one, we've never had to educate the fans as to what the rules of the game are. They know when to cheer. They know the rules. And that's been amazing. But the thing that I've noticed is if we've played a team twice throughout the season, the first game, that Red Wings fan would be head-to-toe in Red Wings gear. That second game, the same fan might throw on their Golden Knights jersey and then still keep the Red Wings hat. But that whole shift we're seeing over the course of the season of people giving up their hometown allegiance team and becoming Golden Knights fans.
Wrapping it up with Brian Killingsworth, how do you not go too fast? And what I mean by that is, I'm seeing this with the Raiders, that people are just picking up the phone. How do I get involved with an NFL team that's coming in 2 years, from bars, casinos? Everybody wants to jump in, and I'm assuming that's already happened with you. How do you tell certain partners, we're ready to go into partnership with you and others, we're going to have to wait because we have a conflicting partner that we're already doing business with? How complicated is that?
It's a little complicated, but for us, we want to grow strategically, mm-hmm. from the fan side and on the business side from a sponsorship standpoint, and we want to select the right partners that obviously want to do business with us and want to grow with us. And so that's been part of the process of just vetting it out, and I think more importantly, it's just finding partners that are unique and here local to Vegas, and then look for the opportunistic companies that are more nationally based.
What have you heard from Gary Bettman and the NHL, the executive offices, on what you're doing specifically on the marketing side and the organization in general? They must be thrilled.
Yeah, they love us right now, and it's pretty interesting because we almost feel bad going on the league calls because every league call is talking about how great the Vegas Golden Knights are, but we've really strived hard to become that model franchise, and I think it's such a unique market that we're able to do this on, but it's obviously paved the way for other markets like Seattle to try to follow suit.
The footprint in downtown Summerlin with the practice facility, how sharp of a move was that?
Incredible. And not one public dime from Bill Foley. He supported that financially himself, $31 million facility. But the great thing about it is it's the destination all throughout the year. You can come to the free practices, but you can also go to an open skate with your family right next door on the other rink. And so it's a two-sheet of ice facility with an incredible restaurant at McKenzie River Pizza, but the place is jam-packed on days where the team is there doing morning skate. But we've had tremendous interest in kids learning to skate and then learning to play the game of hockey as a result of the success of this team.
One more thing in regards to media. We're the flagship station. It's great that you can come in here. I like the television coverage. I like the national coverage. As a marketing guy, what would you like to see a little bit more of going forward, especially deeper in the playoffs?
I think more national games. Saturday is going to be a great national game on NBC at 5 o'clock here locally. I think it tells the story of how great this community is supporting this team. And people around the world are seeing Vegas as this hotbed and just this incredible place to celebrate the game of hockey. That's the only broadcast that I've seen where they show the entire intro. So they're showing our intro all across the country, which I think showcases some of the best that we have in the entertainment. But, you know, locally, our ratings were incredible. One out of every five households in Vegas last night were tuned into Golden Knights games.
And that, again, it's incredible because you don't even think of the bars and restaurants where it's on everywhere. I mean, when was the last time in this town that you could go into a casino, you can go into a bar, and every TV's got a hockey game on, and we're sitting here heading into Cinco de Mayo, and everybody's on edge. All right, last question. Are you concerned that a lot of fans are getting a little bit overhyped about this? It is coming a little easy, isn't it?
It is for us. I think it's interesting. You know, we're all just riding this wave, and it's incredibly special to be a part of, and I think we're just celebrating with that, and we're just going to know that this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Congratulations on all your success, and I really appreciate the jersey.
Thanks, JT.
Brian Killingsworth, the chief marketing officer. Everyone I've met in this organization has been absolute five-star, and I'm really happy for this team. They deserve it. The national game is tomorrow night. We're ready for that, 5 o'clock. I'll be in the house for that. If you're down there right outside at the park, if you're at any of the local venues, get to that game early. It's going to be incredible, the opening. There will be another surprise again. Come early, stay late. Let's get this going. When we come back, we'll wrap it up. I'll get you up to speed with a couple of the draft picks in the second round. The Dolphins pick is in at number 42. And some of the surprises, some of the best available players that are left. We'll get into the Raider draft pick later next week. Monday, we have former Giants head coach Jim Fossil, Raiders legend Cliff Branch going to join us, Al Bernstein. So we got a big Monday coming up after this great weekend. You're listening to Fox.
For the Cleveland Browns organization, this was the best available player. And I think that what he brings to this organization, I couldn't be more excited to him after, you know, and those other guys are really good quarterbacks too. But I just felt this was the best fit for this organization moving forward.
JT, back with you, courtesy of the SG Bar right here at the 215 in Flamingo. That's where I'll be later on tonight. Come on out there for gaming, great food, tremendous drink specials, and a great place to talk. Vegas Golden Knights. Look, we can't sit here and address the draft and say that this player's a bust when they have a baseball cap on and a suit. They haven't played yet in the NFL. So we can't sit here and take a look and say that this team made a bad decision, but that's my job. And I think that Cleveland really risked it early on in that draft by taking Baker Mayfield number one overall. He's a really good Heisman Trophy winning quarterback who's undersized, playing in that freezing cold weather, outdoors with an attitude in Cleveland. Now you could say, what happens if he went to the Jets at number three? How would he handle New York and the New York tabloids? I think Cleveland is a better place for Mayfield than Sam Darnold will be in New York. And I think Sam Darnold will, right, at least for the first year, I think they'll like him there because he's the next coming of Joe Namath. I repeat, the next coming of Joe Namath in that market. But for Baker Mayfield, I wish him well. I just thought it took a lot of balls for them to go out there and make those picks and think that they were going to go 1-4 and not take Sam Darnold and Chubb, the pass rusher, coming off the edge. I mean, to me, most of the mock drafts, the guys who are really good at this, the guys who get paid as analysts, no one had that. So how could Cleveland go into a draft being that different from every expert who didn't think they'd do that? Well, you could say, well, what do the experts know? They're on TV putting makeup on. They're not in the war room. But again, a lot of these guys have been in war rooms, and they have a tremendous track record. So coming up at the top of the hour, I'll get into the NFL draft a little bit heavier tonight. We have some really good guests coming up to break down what happened in round one, and we are underway in round two, which should be pretty exciting here. The Raiders, I think the Raiders really got to come out of the second round and make a difference here going into the third round because the Raiders are in a tough spot here on defense, and they're going to have to come out of this draft with guys who can play. I don't know if their offensive guard can play right out of the gate. I don't know. He's a guy that they're going to add depth to, but we'll see. Hey, coming up at 5:30, Matt Millen, the former great linebacker of the Raiders, will join us. He was in the war room, obviously, as the general manager of the Detroit Lions. That didn't work out well, but he's really good with the Raiders. Jeff Zieglet, our insider from USA Today on the NBA. Jerry Coleman from The Fan in Baltimore on the Ravens pick and what they've done in the first round. And Alex Marvez from Sporting News and SiriusXM NFL coverage and his analysis on what's happening in the draft. If you miss any portion of the show, go to lvsportsnetwork.com to find the podcast of the show. And if you miss anything else there, we're putting a lot of our content up on Twitter at JT the Brick. For Bobby and everyone at Golden Entertainment, thanks for listening all week. We've been on a nice run lately. And this upcoming, a week from Saturday, our big radio remote from Poncho's in downtown Summerlin, the first real Raiders remote in Vegas since the announcement. Seven Raider legends who have at least one Super Bowl ring will be there. We'll be at Poncho's on Cinco de Mayo from 12 to 2 on the air, 2 to 3, a Q&A with Rod Martin and a couple other surprises there. Poncho's for Mexican food, tequila shot specials, and margaritas. How could you not spend Cinco de Mayo at Poncho's? We'll start it up here again in a few minutes. Thanks for listening all week long on the Vegas Golden Knights flagship, Fox Sports Radio.